Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Back on FST, hour number three on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So that was action-packed hour. We had back-to-back guests with Mo Moten talking about the Raiders and Manish Mehta talking about the Jets. Like I left you with that quote right before the break. He just doesn't know what he's doing. That's a current employee giving out quotes like that. So it doesn't instill a lot of confidence that the organization is moving in the right direction. I think Manish has it right. He knows his team better than just about anybody from an outsider's perspective. And he understands that I don't think that move impacts the team that greatly this year. And the Jets have stockpiled a good amount of talent. Bell and Mosley and more, and Crowder and more, in addition to the players that they drafted, some of whom think many of people think that Quinnen Williams could be the best player in the entire draft. So they've had a good offseason. I did think they spent a little wildly, but sometimes to get the good players, you got to do that. And they had plenty of cap room, so why not just throw your weight around when you have the opportunity? But I think we both would agree that they'd be pretty good this year. You know, if the Jets got to around 8-8 and are sniffing out a playoff spot, that wouldn't stun me. I'd probably still take the under if you told me it was 8, but it's because of the Jets, and there's too many new pieces for me to be sold right now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the product on the field, when you look at it, okay, well, what does Darnold take that next step? Obviously, that's a huge thing. If the quarterback can take that next step. Le'Veon Bell, I assume he's going to be there. I assume he's not going to be traded, so we know the running back situation is going to be good. The wide receivers, okay, I think they're a little short there. You know, I think they could use a big name there. Anderson, Inunmu, Crowder. If they're all healthy and playing well, it's a solid group. But I think you're asking a lot there. You know, Crowder's done nothing in a couple of years now. You know, Anderson, I think, is more of a number two than a number one. Quincy's a good number three.
And then with neck surgery.
Right. So we'll see. We'll just see what happens there. Herndon, I think, is a solid tight end. As you and I discussed earlier in the show, tight end's a vast wasteland throughout the NFL. It's tough. You know, fantasy-wise, he's a tight end too. But there's some upside there. He's a solid tight end. And I think Quinnen Williams was the best player in the draft. I do. So I think they did well there. I think the defense is solid somewhat. Avery Williamson, C.J. Mosley. I like the linebacking core. Maybe the back end, we'll see what happens there outside of Jamal Adams. I don't know if I trust anybody there, including Tremaine Johnson. So I think there's still work to be done. But I think, you know, I think if I was going to set a line here, it would probably be 7.5 wins for the Jets as far as an over-under.
I figured you'd say 7.5, yeah. I think they were right there.
I think it's about right. I mean, I don't think the division is death. I mean, we know New England's New England, but they're not the team they used to be. They're still the best team, but they're not the team they used to be. Miami sucks. And Buffalo seems to have a great defense. I think Miami has to be the worst team in football.
I do. That's what I meant. Yeah, I think they're the worst team in football. I think they're the worst roster on paper in football.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, who else could you put in there?
Cardinals. We just went over them.
They're Cardinals are close. Cardinals are pretty bad too, but they're not that bad. No, Cardinals might be the worst team in the NFC.
I think the Lions are going in the wrong direction. The Giants. I think the Giants in Miami are really gonna. The Giants in Miami are. I can talk myself into just about any team, George, after the draft and free agency, and be like, "Hey, look at the moves they made." I think the two teams that I can't do that with are the Dolphins and the Giants. But the Dolphins, I think, are trying to blow it all up. The Giants don't seem to.
Oh, so do I.
The Giants, don't appear
the Giants
to be
are
doing
another team. They don't seem to know what they're doing either. Gannon was things up as he goes along.
There is no integrity or honesty about the roster and what they're doing. It's the problem with the Giants. We can go for an hour on that. They're not moving in one direction. They're telling you one thing, signing a guy, then trading him. And they say, we're fine with Eli and we're drafting this guy. There's no integrity about what they're doing for the Giants. That's a totally separate topic, but I think that's fair to say. But you're right. So back to the Jets. 7.5. That's about the line.
It is. I think they're heading in the right direction. I do. It's off the field. I don't know if what's going on is going to implode the team anyway, where it won't matter what they're doing here. I'm trying not to just kill this organization, but it's hard not to see what's going on here. With all the backroom fighting, how Gase gets all this control that they're doing nothing throughout his career. It's just strange.
Manish's article, when you read it, you're like, seriously? Like, how does that even happen? He moves his chair on draft night out of view of the camera so that it wouldn't be documented that he had anything to do with the draft night. And he was sitting next to the CEO, and he moved his chair out of camera view so that McCagnan was just on camera with Chris Johnson, and they went from there. Like, it's just stunning that that's how he went about it. There is a lack of professionalism about the way he went about it, and people are going to consider him to be a backstabber. Now, does that hurt him in the organization, and does that hurt him with players? I don't know. The thing with Le'Veon Bell, it's certainly bad optics. There's another article on Pro Football Talk today that says they've been in constant discussion. Manish laid it all out. He's like, here's what happened. He didn't want him. He did not want him. He certainly didn't want him to pay a lot of money, but he didn't want him for the needs of the team. Now, that relationship can coexist. It doesn't have to be great. It just can't blow up like what happened in Pittsburgh with AB and everything there, right? It just has to be on a professional level.
I mean, a lot of it's just PR, right? The coach didn't want him, got stuck with him anyway, because now he loves him. It's just the way the game is played.
Yeah.
I think this is also dysfunctional, by the way. You have to know the coach's system. And if he doesn't believe in having a bell cow running back, I didn't mean to say bell cow, just came out.
It still applies.
If you don't want that, then the GM or the can't sign that player. Doesn't make any sense. You're forcing, a round peg into a square hole. Because he doesn't want to use him that way. He doesn't believe in that. And listen, and he's not the only one. There are a lot of organizations who don't believe in paying the big running back, that you're better spending your resources on another position. And I sort of agree with that as well.
It is true.
We've seen this over and over again, mainly because running back's short shelf life. You don't want to pay them $14, $16, $18 million a year. Hell, did we learn anything from Todd Gurley? And he got paid. Now we don't know what's going to become of him.
Yeah,
with this knee injury here. So it's just it's going to be curious. You look at the Cowboys. They seem to want to pay everybody else first before they get to Ezekiel Elliott. They paid DeMarcus Lawrence. They're going to pay Dak Prescott. Whether or not we want to talk about how if that's right or wrong, that's a different topic here. But you can see how organizations think. They think about paying the other positions first. They'll pay Amari Cooper before they pay Ezekiel Elliott. I'm on board with that there, but the play was forced upon them. Which, in my mind, that's automatically dysfunctional. When you're forcing a player upon a new head coach, that if the player doesn't fit his system, it doesn't make sense to me.
And the article details how McCagnan doesn't want Gase involved. He wouldn't let him communicate directly with scouts. And it was a Mike McCagnan production, as Manish said, all the way through free agency and into the draft. Did he do a bad job? I don't think so. But signing a guy that the coach doesn't want, specifically because it's system related, is the height of dysfunction. It's just telling you, well, I know better and I know what's better for this team and you don't. It's like, well, I'm coaching the team and I don't really want that guy. Well, I'm signing him anyway because the owner wants him. McCagnan, really, in that instance, McCagnan needs to go to bat for the coach and say to Chris Johnson, look, it's a bad fit. We'll pick up a back somewhere else. It's a bad fit for us. We can't spend that money. It's a waste. Let's go get somebody else. Let's pay Anthony Barr a little extra money so that he comes here, right? They lost out on Anthony Barr. Use some of that Le'Veon Bell money to overpay Anthony Barr if you want him so much, right? Like, that's the kind of thing that you really should be doing if you're all on the same page, right or wrong.
Oh, I agree with you. And I'll assume Maccagna did that, that he tried to talk Johnson out of Bell. I'll assume it, because it makes no sense for him not to. But if the owner says sign him, you got no choice. So I'll give Maccagna a pass on that. But I have to assume that he went to the owner and said, listen, it doesn't make any sense. Gase doesn't want him. He doesn't fit the system here. Why spend $14 million? Let's put that money towards somebody else, even though we have a gazillion dollars in cap room. But if the owner says, I don't care, I want him, that's a different problem. And there's nothing Maccagna can do then. And I assume that's what happened there. I have to assume that. Because if not, then you're not doing your job. You're just not doing it. Then you deserve to go. All right, you have to tell the owner. And this is what I mean by owners own. They should stay out of these things. I mean, hey, for the longest time, man, I'm a Cowboy, Yankee, and Islander fan. So I grew up under Steinbrenner. He had the same problem. He couldn't stay out of things. That's why the Yankees sucked for a while. People don't notice. The reason the Yankees got good is when Steinbrenner got suspended in the early 90s. Then Gene Michael took over, and Michael made the right moves. You know, and that's when the Yankees took off again. Then George laid off a little bit. I'm an Islander fan. We know what a joke that ownership has been over the past couple of decades. And I'm a Cowboy fan dealing with Jerry Jones. Right? Yep. And the only time over the past 20, 25 years, ever since the Aikman years, the only time the Cowboys were good was when Jones hired we hired Bill Parcells. Parcells took over. He put the organization in check when he stayed out of it. Now he's not, he's letting his son Steven take over. Steven is better than Jerry. He's not perfect, but he's better than Jerry. The team has gotten better again. Yeah.
In the football business now for almost 30 years, learning on the job. So even if he couldn't handle the responsibility early, I think Steven Jones has, at least if you want to give him credit for one thing, he has stayed dedicated to being in the football business and learning about it. Now he's got 30 years of experience.
The problem is these billionaire owners think because they were successful in whatever business got them there, that they can be a football guy too. I was successful in whatever, Jerry Jones was with oil and all this other crap, that I'll just be a successful football guy too. Doesn't work that way. That's why, owners own, GM, coaches coach. That's generally the way it should be. I've never been a big fan of when you hear GM say, listen, I signed the players, you make it work. No, it shouldn't be that way. You have to have some kind of communication with your coach to get him the kind of players that he needs that's going to fit his system. And the Jets went, in my mind, directly against that. It just didn't win. And then that's not Gase's fault. Gase has a system he has to go by it. And I that's why I truly have to believe Maccagna did go to Johnson and say, hey, Gase doesn't want Bell. He doesn't fit the system. I agree with him. I love Bell, but it's not going to work here. Let's find somebody who Gase wants.
And
the owner says, no, screw it. I'm going
to
sign him too. But if the owner says that, then it doesn't. I want this player. I want him signing. Do the old George Steinbrenner thing. I want to make the big splash.
Yeah,
you have no choice. But man, you're going to have so many problems later on. You're never going to get players who actually fit your system.
That's right. And by the way, we have staffers and people all around the media and the football world saying this CEO doesn't really know what he's doing. So what did he rely on in order to assume that they needed Le'Veon Bell? Twitter? Like, screw that. That's not any way to make a decision. There's other people that you've hired to make those decisions. You don't just do that. Like, there's nothing.
I think it's
people
PR.
In the buildings.
Splash
right.
signing.
It's just dumb. It's dumb. And maybe Le'Veon Bell will work out. I think it's a pretty good landing spot, but the fact that Gase doesn't really want him, it makes it a tough situation already. Anyway, here's the Jets' schedule. They host the Bills and Browns to open the season. You want to go game by game? You can let me know what you think. Do they beat the Bills to open the season at home?
Well, let's say 1-1 there. Let's say they'll beat one of them.
That's fair. At New England? No. Bye week. Early bye week for them. Yeah. So 1-2 right now. Bye week. Early bye week for the Jets. I don't know if that's good or bad. At Philly, coming out of the bye. It's a tough one.
You like to have the extra break, 2 weeks to prepare here, but you're at Philadelphia. I'm going to go loss.
They host Dallas and New England. They get New England out of the way before middle of October. They host Dallas, New England in weeks 6 and 7. One and one?
Boy. 1-1. Let's give them 1-1 again. Okay.
Okay. So they're 2-3 now. No, what do I have them at? They were 1-2. They were 1-3. Now they're 2-4. Yikes. At Jacksonville, at Miami.
Well, this is where they need to make hay, right? This part of the schedule right here is where they need make hay. Because it's Jacksonville, Miami, Giants, Washington, Oakland, Cincinnati, Miami again.
Yeah,
that's not tough. I mean, they need to go on a run here. No, they need to go on a run. This has to be, how many games? 1, 2, 3. This is 6, 7 games. 5-2. If you want to make anything out of this season, this has to be probably 5-2 because we're giving you wins. You know, the Dallas, New England, I'm not so sure you win either one of those. Yeah, I do think you beat Buffalo. I think you lose to Cleveland. But this better be 5-2 if you want to make anything out of your season.
So you give them 5-2, that still only makes them 7-6. And then they're at Baltimore, hosting the Steelers at Buffalo.
Well, there's your 7.5 over-under, right? Baltimore at Baltimore, I'm probably giving you a loss. So we're saying 7-7. That's it. And we're giving him 5-2. I actually think it's probably 4-3. Pittsburgh is a loss at Buffalo. Is that game important to Buffalo? I think if it's important to Buffalo, it's a loss.
It's got to be.
At Buffalo, December?
Has to be.
Yes.
Buffalo's may not be. It may not be a playoff spot. That sucked, but Buffalo's got a challenge for a playoff spot. How many times are they going to turn their roster over? They're like, they built it the same way as the Jets. I know. I'm worried.
You know what?
What worries me about the Bills is they went out and signed 9 guys, and their receiving core is still Zay Jones, Cole Beasley, and John Brown. That's it. That's the receiving core. And they spent a lot of money to do it.
I mean, they tried to get Antonio Brown, right? Brown turned them down.
Yeah.
So they did try. You know, I'll give him all props for that, but maybe you'll try a little harder and get somebody there.
Participation trophy, George.
Well, that's all the rage nowadays, right?
Yeah, and they didn't do it.
The thing is, I'll say it again. It's a quarterback-driven league. You have a quarterback in Josh Allen who I think is good, but you didn't surround him with the weapons. How is he going to take the next step?
I totally agree.
You just mentioned that receiving core. Cole Beasley is nothing special, regardless of what he might think he is. John Brown, okay, nice deep threat, but that's a complimentary person. Zay Jones, who the hell knows? He's not running around naked in any hotels. We'll see what he can do. But he's, once again, nothing special here. I'm not so sure there's a number 2 on the roster, more or less a number 1. And you're just hindering what your quarterback's going to be. So that's the problem.
And the tight end is Tyler Croft, and they drafted Dawson Knox.
Once again, where are the weapons? Where are the weapons?
That's not good enough. I think the defense could actually be really good.
So do I.
But I think that's tough. We spent a lot of time talking about the Jets, and we just went through it, man. We think that the best case scenario is they win 8 games. That's everything goes
well. I would agree.
So you'd have to take the under. So we'll come back. We'll keep talking Jets, and we'll do Raiders after this as well.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Back on FST, hour number 3. We continue up to 11 o'clock, where George is going to stay with you and be joined by Cam Stewart. Find him on Twitter at Cam Stewart Live. I'm sure you guys will be talking some hockey, right? Talking a little bit maybe talk a little golf, a little baseball, a little football. You guys are going around the horn on a lot of different sports.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about everything. Really everything. I have no doubt about that at all. Baseball will be big on the docket. Hockey, of course, there's only one series going on now, and there's no hockey today, which is always disappointing as the playoffs go on. Baseball, it's the same thing. One series is over, so we only got one game every other day here, boo-hoo, before we get to the Stanley Cup Finals, and then no hockey at all.
What's the Eastern Conference? Where are we at with that right now?
Boston won, so Boston will host whoever comes out of the West. It was San Jose or St. Louis.
They're just playing better than everybody right now, Boston. They're just curb-stomping teams.
Listen, I'm not trying to put down anybody, but, you know, I think we knew Boston was going to go on here. Carolina, we saw the second round. Islanders ran out of magic. The Islanders weren't a great team by any means. They, some would argue, not even a good team. All right, they were a solid team that everything went their way against Pittsburgh, and then all the magic ran out against Carolina. I think the same thing happened when Carolina played Boston. Carolina is, once again, not a great team. Good team, arguably, but all the magic ran out against a good team in Boston. I don't think Boston's great either. They're very good. And in the NHL, in hockey, if your goalie's playing well, you're a lock. And right now, Rask is unbeatable. He's feeling it. Now, the Stanley Cup Finals is not going to start the Memorial Day. Memorial Day night. That's when game one is.
Really?
You can do the math there. That's nine. Yeah. Once again, the other series is still going on. They've got minimum 2 days, means minimum four more days.
Dude, what the hell?
So even if
the Bruins stopped playing 2 days ago and it's 9 days from now, that's an 11-day break.
That's an 11-day break. The Islanders had the same break, and you saw what it did to them. They weren't the same team in the round two. Columbus Blue Jackets, you know, they had the break. They didn't play very well against Boston. The breaks have been unkind to teams right now because you just lose that edge. I do wonder if that affects Boston in the finals, that they're going to have an 11-day break. Actually, more than 11-day break. When was the last time they played? Yeah, okay. It'll be an incredibly long time. I think it will be 11 days, actually. The NHL, listen, the NHL doesn't care about its teams. They care all about TV. Yeah, so it's whatever day and time TV dictated. If TV said, hey, that's not how the Stanley Cup Finals until July 4th, the NHL would wait till July 4th. Yeah, right? That's just the way it is. They bow down to TV.
I can't really blame the NHL for doing that, but it's an unusually long break. I guess it just worked out like that because this thing may very well go seven, so you can't really schedule them before that, and then that team needs a couple of breaks, travel day, whatever. So I did ask a question to Mo Moten because I did not squeeze it in during our interview, probably bad timing by me, but I asked him after the break, do you think Carr is the starting QB when they move to Vegas? So here's what he said. He said, I honestly think that depends on how he performs this year. They have two first-round picks in 2020, their pick and the Bears pick from Khalil Mack deal. With Tua from Alabama, Tagovailoa, that's it, yeah. Jake Fromm and Justin Herbert all potentially coming out of school, it'll be tempting to take one of them if Carr doesn't play at a high level. Now, Gruden isn't very patient with younger QBs or underperforming QBs in general. Constant turnover at the position in Tampa Bay after that Super Bowl with Brad Johnson. His contract also allows the Raiders to cut him with only $5 million in dead money left over so they can save a lot of money, too, which is part of the reason why I thought this was leaning towards them moving on from Carr. They can really move on from him after this year without any kind of penalty. I think the teams that could be looking at quarterbacks next year are the Raiders. It is Cincinnati. It is Miami. Unfortunately, Josh Rosen, I think, is going to be in the exact same position 12 months from now, where he will have had a QB drafted over him. I think that's what's going to happen in Miami. I really
do. I agree.
They're going to be terrible this year. What's he going to do?
And they don't have great weapons either. You know, it's not like he's playing with a whole bunch of great weapons there where he can really show what he can do. Yeah, I think he's going to be the same exact
situation. Not great is a huge compliment.
I'm trying to be nice. I'm trying to be a different George.
You are trying to be nice. Stills is good. Right, DeMonte Parker hasn't done anything. Bryce Butler is their third wideout. Tight end is Mike Kosicki. He was a rookie last year. I can't judge him yet. But Kenyon Drake, Kalen Ballage, Miles Gaskin, pretty good. But where is the offensive line at? They upped Laramie Tunsil for his fifth-year option. Great. And the rest of the offensive line might not be any good. The defense has some good building blocks, but Xavien Howard, Chris Wilkins now, and obviously Minkah Fitzpatrick. But top to bottom, they're just not good. It was miraculous that they won seven games this past year, but a lot of it was related to the easy schedule that they had. So I'm just saying, I think Josh Rosen's going to be in the same position a year from now. Sucks for him because he hasn't done anything wrong necessarily.
No, he hasn't. I mean, he's been on the bad team in Arizona. They hire a new coach that wants to go with Kyle Murray, and I think the same thing's going to happen next season. Miami will have a top two, top three pick at worst, and they'll be in the mix for Tay. And maybe they go that direction. Maybe there's another quarterback. Next year, it's supposed to be a much stronger quarterback draft. in the NFL. So I think they will be taking one. Same thing about Oakland, which started this. I agree with you there, too. And once again, if Carr doesn't play great, you know, I think he has to play great. I don't even think he can play. He can't be average. I don't think he'd be slightly above average. He has to be good to great to keep that job, or else they're going to be forced to take a quarterback as well. Yeah, this is the way the NFL is. You know, Gruden will say all the right things about Carr. Yes, I love him. Yes, he's the quarterback of the future. Blah, blah, blah. That's all lies. All right? Gruden knows that as well as anybody. If the quarterback's working out, then yes, I meant what I said. If it's not, hey, I'm just trying to build up his confidence, trying to get him to play better, and I got to move on and get the guy I do like, or the guy I believe who can take me to the next level. It's just the way it is in the NFL.
Yeah, it is true that he does not like working with younger QBs. So maybe he and Mayock put something together to get a veteran. I don't know. Like, I think the Nick Foles being on the free agency market, that is a rarity. You're not really going to be able to work out that deal. You don't want to sign guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick, holdover guys. Like, that's no way to win a Super Bowl. And the NFL is different now than it was when Gruden coached 15 years ago. It just is. The cheap quarterback is the asset. The biggest asset in the whole league is the cheap quarterback. And you build around them and you try to win quick, like Philly did. What happened with the Foles, Wentz thing was a unique circumstance. And then what happened with the Rams is really the way teams are trying to do it. Let's build around the young guys fast as possible, go all in while Goff is still on a rookie deal, and try to win now. And by all accounts, they had a wildly successful season last year. They didn't win the Super Bowl, but that's not a failed season. That's a successful season.
I agree. Once again, you get no argument from me there. People think, you know, it's either win or bust. Maybe for New England. Yeah, maybe for the Yankees. Yeah. You know, for most teams, you know, some teams, hey, just getting the 500 is a winning season. You think about the Cleveland Browns, I mean, wouldn't a 500 season be a winning season for them this year? Anything else is you're on the right track here. Now, we expect more from Cleveland. You know, I think they're going to win the division. But, you know, just to get to 500 would be good. Then you go on from there. You know, get above 500. Go. It is a good division. Although I have my doubts about Baltimore, and Pittsburgh's a mess. So we'll see how that works out.
I think they're a mess, but I actually think there could be a little bit of a bump, like a addition by subtraction scenario here. Because the roster, top to bottom, is good. It isn't as good with the star power that they had, but it's clear that one of the star players is creating a massive distraction.
Oh, of course. I mean, Brown and Bell both are distractions. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They're both pretty much IME players. And Ben is still there, and he's an IME guy. Yeah, you know, I think he's the biggest IME guy. I think the biggest problem there was Ben. And he's the quarterback, so he's still there. And once again, it's football. It's the way it is. You know, your quarterback gets away with everything. As the GM just said, right, during the, he can pretty much do whatever he wants. That's great. Way to play into that. Way to steer into that curve. I think with the Steelers, it just comes down to, you can't tell me losing Brown and Bell. I understand they survived without Bell last year, but you can't tell me that doesn't affect the team. That they're going to be the same team on. I love Smith-Schuster, but now you're facing the number one cornerback. You're going to face double coverage, safety over the top. Defense is game plan to stop you. Yeah. Let's see how that
works
out.
I think he's good enough. I do. I don't think he's Antonio Brown at that level, who has had the most amazing five-year run in NFL history. But I think Juju's good enough to handle it. That's all I'll say. Okay. But back to the Raiders, just to wrap up that discussion, that's why I thought that they were moving on. Like, I'm trying to think, if there are any other teams that jump out to you. I track this quarterback stuff all the time. I'm trying to see if I have – I don't have it pulled up right now. So maybe you and I, next time we're on air, we'll do the – you know, how I go through the quarterbacks and we figure out who's going to – needs a new quarterback, who's going to stick with theirs. You know, I think the Raiders are a little bit down the list, but still high on the list. And I think Cincinnati and Miami are going to be really the two primary teams looking for a QB next year. Is that fair?
Well, I was surprised Cincinnati passed up at a quarterback at 11. Right? I mean, they seemed to be in a good spot. Quarterbacks were dropping. Only Jones and Murray were gone. I was surprised they passed up one at 11.
They could have gone with Haskins. They could have been the quarterback in the future.
Yeah, and once again, if you didn't believe in Haskins, then I have no problem with this. Okay, if you, because I think you do have to believe here, but you were in a spot, in a good spot to take one, and you didn't. So that always concerns you. Once again, but maybe they know they're going to suck in next. As I say it again, next year's a good quarterback draft, much better than this year, or shall they say? So maybe that's their thinking as well, and that doesn't bother me at all if that's where you're going for it. But I once again, when you don't have a quarterback and Cincinnati doesn't, you have a very average one in Andy Dalton, passing up on one in Haskins. Dangerous, especially if you had any kind of where you did believe in him. As I said, if you crossed him over, you know, I don't want Haskins, I don't believe in him, he's not going to be my kind of guy, I want a mobile quarterback, something like that, whatever it might be, then I'm okay with that, Mike. I'm okay. You got to follow with your beliefs here. But if you liked Haskins in any way and you passed up on him, then I think it's a huge mistake because you don't have one in Dalton. You just don't. Dalton is showing you exactly what he is.
I read an article a couple of weeks ago that was like, try to extolling the virtues of Andy Dalton in the Zach Taylor offense. Like, you could get a bump out of Cincinnati, out of him this year, but it was also more related to the defense was terrible. And if Dalton played a full season and the defense was bad again, he would just have opportunities to try to keep coming from behind and throwing and scoring and the like. I just think this team is really built this year around Joe Mixon and trying to keep other teams off the field. They've improved the offensive line, which was a complete disaster 2 years ago. They spent a couple of years building it up, so it'll be better. But I think those are the top two teams in Cincinnati and Miami that will be looking for QBs. Cincinnati's not necessarily going to crater and win three games. Miami will. But the Bengals, I could see them scraping out six wins again, and they're, you know, picking 8th to 12th or something, you know, whatever. Sort of like they did this past year. X-factor teams for QBs next year are the Titans and the Bucks for obvious reasons.
Titans, Bucks, you said Oakland, you know, which they certainly could be in the mix here if things aren't working out. I'm going down a list as well here to see any other teams there. Titans, I think Mariota is what he is. I think they are looking for somebody here as far as that's concerned. And I think that's really it, right? Because I'm looking here, nobody else truly fits. Although, I have my doubts about Nick Foles in Jacksonville. Yeah, you know, I have a lot of doubts about Nick Foles and Jacksonville.
But they can't get out.
I don't think that's
going to
work out. No, but I don't think he's going to. I don't think he's going to be anywhere near what they think he's going to.
I understand the path to that. I probably have a little bit more faith than you do, but I'm not completely sold. I think it made sense for them, and because they're still sort of built win now. Unfortunately, their star linebacker decided to take the year off, which there appears to be almost no information on exactly why, but that was a tough blow for them to lose Telvin Smith for the entire year. So that's it. Really good football discussion today. We know we're sort of in the heart of baseball season, but big stories, and we wanted to provide you some sort of fantasy advice, NFL news and notes and all that kind of stuff. So anything else to wrap up there on any of those stories that we mentioned today? George?
You know, football never goes away. I mean, it truly is the never-ending sport. I know it'll slow down a little bit in a couple of weeks after all the mandatory minicamps are over. Then football does go on hiatus.
Yeah, I know how to wrap this up. And we did our dynasty draft.
And that... We did.
Dynasty draft. So I'm going to look at your picks. This is to set it up for everybody, we talked about it before, 45-man roster, 5-man taxi squad, rookies only. So the only drafting we do every year is just backfilling the roster or really filling up the roster with hopefully an impactful rookie. The problem is George and I have generally good teams here, so we never pick early and we never really get a chance to go after – the big name running backs. So George, and it is an IDP league as well, which is why the rosters are so big. So George, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You had an extra third round pick this year somehow. So Devin White, linebacker from Tampa. That's a home run right there at the 10th pick. Then you got Rock Armstead out of Temple. He goes to Jacksonville. He'll be backing up Leonard Fournette. I like that. I could see a path to him seeing some carries, not just this year, but after that. Jay Sternberger, the heir apparent to Jimmy Graham at tight end in Green Bay. Like that. Then you got Jonathan Abram, impact safety for Oakland. Rodney Anderson, I see that. I got the other guy, Travion Williams, backing up Joe Mixon. Then you got Travis Horner and Kahale Waring in at tight end in Houston. Like a year from now, I think Waring could be something. He only started playing football his senior year of high school. Best days could be ahead for him, but I like that in a six-round draft to get him that late. In fact, he was on my board really late too. I'll run through who I got. And my draft changed right before it, and I'm glad I found out before and not after that Doug Baldwin was retiring, because I picked Paris Campbell, and then I picked Andy Isabella, and then I got Travion Williams, Josh Oliver at tight end, Bobby Okereke at linebacker, Jeffrey Simmons, who'll be on the shelf for an entire year with an ACL. I'd throw him on the taxi squad. And then Christian Wilkins, who was like my favorite player in the draft, so I felt like I had to do it. Those are the guys I went with. You have about 30 seconds to talk about it. Why did you approach your draft in the way that you did?
Well, it's an IDP league, and I think people who in this league forget that IDPs are so important. We start more defensive players than we do offensive players in this league.
11-9.
We got rid of kickers?
Yeah.
Damn, I guess
it used to be 11-9.
Right, I forgot.
Now it's 11-8.
Forgot they voted that out. So I had the 10th pick. So all the good offensive players are gone. Would have loved a running back. Just wasn't one there. So it's easy to take the linebacker, a top player in this league. Linebackers are the equivalent of probably a strong running back, too.
Agreed. I had to go wide out, because Michael Crabtree and Doug Baldwin are out of the league. So I need impactful wide receivers as rookies. May not happen. We'll talk baseball after this.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99, or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Soundgarden here. I don't know if Sean knows how much I love this band, but good stuff. So we're closing it out here. Final segment before George takes over with Cam Stewart. We should probably just talk some baseball, right? That's sort of where we're headed today, taking a look at pitching matchups. I know we spent a lot of time on football today, but as George said, it's year-round, so we like talking about football, and we think it's useful for you as fans to figure out what happened, especially in a week where the Jets did what they did. We might have just talked to Mo Moten this week to talk about the Raiders and all the moves that they made, but the Jets made it incumbent upon us to have to get them back into the discussion. At least we're talking about them, George. It's better than indifference.
Oh, what is it? The NEPR is good PR thing, that sort of thing there?
Yeah, pretty much.
Sure, in some ways, but everything that's coming out here, this is a cluster. This is bad. Yeah. I mean, dysfunctional is putting it nicely here. Like I said, this would be different if it was a Bill Parcells type of head coach. You know, a guy who has credibility, has ammunition. Someone put it on Twitter. I wish I remembered who. How does Gase keep failing up? And I think that's accurate. How does he keep failing up?
That clearly appears to be a strategy of his. You know who did that well in the NFL? LeGarrette Blount.
Some truth in that too.
Kicked off the Steelers in the middle of the season. Pats just took him back and won a Super Bowl. Contributed. It was really the other guy. I have to credit Dan Le Batard with that. I think he said, this is a few years ago, obviously, he's like, failing your way to success, the LeGarrette Blount story is, if you were to write a story of like LeGarrette Blount's 2016 season or whatever it was, he did that. So, all right, let's talk some baseball here. Just get into who's throwing today. Blake Snell against Tanaka, pretty good pitching matchup. Numbers don't look spectacular from either guy, and Snell has struggled certainly more than he did a year ago, but a pretty good high-profile pitching matchup today for the Rays and Yankees, who are separated by a half game in the AL East.
Yeah, that's a game starting in a couple of hours here. Snell pitched very well against the Yankees last week, but it couldn't last very long. I think he had 12 strikeouts, but only in 5-plus innings. Threw a lot of pitches there. Needs to go a little deeper into these into this game, especially after what happened with the Rays yesterday, where they were winning pretty handily, and then all of a sudden Alvarado gave it up in the ninth inning. Granted, it was after a rain delay, but I don't see how that could have affected Alvarado, as he wasn't pitching before the rain delay. So it really shouldn't have bothered him at all. But it's kind of a bit – listen, it's May. There are no big games. But – the Yankees now have won three or four from the Rays in the past week plus. I'm sure the Rays would like to win this game. Plus, they have their ace on the mound. You know, they want Snell to make a presence against the Yankees today. It's somewhat of a big game for the Rays, and the Yankees have also taken over first place now.
Yeah. Are you concerned at all? Are you calm about Snell long term for this season? It's going to be hard to duplicate what he did last year, but as a fantasy asset, you like Snell the rest of the way here?
He started off strong and then had that weird accident in the bathroom, right? According to the report, listen, we never know how true these things are, but he dropped a piece of bathroom furniture or whatever on his foot, right, and broke a toe. Now, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that toe is completely healed so quickly. So I think that's part of it, where it's still a little uncomfortable. So I think he gets better as the toe gets better. If you're asking me, would I trade him if I have Snell? No. Would I look to acquire him? Sure. If someone wants to trade Snell to me for 80 cents on a dollar, I'm buying. I may not be buying at 100, even money. Maybe not, because I may have some doubts there. But if someone wants to sell him to me any cheaper, I'll take him.
Okay. You and I never talked about the contract that he signed. What a mistake. What a mistake he made. He gave up free agency until he was 30 for $50 million. And he just come off of Cy Young. I still don't understand it.
I think it comes down to this. If I'm a position player, I am not signing that contract. Because once again, I got to assume I'm going to be able to hit and I'm going to make more money. If I'm a pitcher, I'm signing a damn contract. I'm going to get as much money as I can up front. Hey, he's never going to spend that money. He's fine. Granted, it's not as much money as he could have made. But we all seen... you could blow your arm out at any time when your career is done. Ask Matt Harvey.
Yeah.
All right? Mark Pryor. I mean, we can carry Wood. We can go on and on and on with pitchers who we thought were going to be the next, Roger Clemens, the next great thing. And they blew out their arms, and they were never the same.
The problem I have with Snell is that we know now that there's no market for pitchers that are 30 years old. Right? It's dried up. If you're old,
it's tough.
If you're 31,
I would say there's no market, but you got to be damn good.
Damn good. And Dallas Keuchel's damn good, and I know he's maybe a dinosaur.
Keuchel's not damn good.
He won a Cy Young Award.
Keuchel is not. Good for him.
You hate Dallas
Keuchel's
Keuchel.
Nowhere near any. He's a guy who throws 88 miles an hour. He's not in this class. He's not.
I get it. And
there's
that,
a reason he's still out
like
there.
That
nobody wants Keuchel. Justin Verlander is 38.
He's going to get signed, though.
He's signed easy.
A week. Yeah.
No, Keuchel and Kimbrel are not signed until after the June 3rd amateur draft. That
June
I can guarantee.
June 3rd. That's what I mean. Yeah. So that they don't have to.
Exactly. If anybody who's unaware, after that, then there's no draft pick compensation. If teams are waiting this long, they're certainly going to wait 2.5 more weeks. So they're not signing then.
That's the delay now. Yeah, that's the delay now for both those guys. So,
and that needs to be fixed in the new CBA.
Right. Okay. Other guys on the mound today, you're looking at Walker Buehler, who's carrying a 4.15 ERA, but is 4-0. Aaron Nola carrying a 4.86 ERA, who's 3-0. It's Steven Matz, 3.2. He's the lowest ERA of the bunch. 3-2, 3.86. Maybe thoughts on those pitchers, rapid fire. I'm not worried about Aaron Nola. The ERA is higher than you want it to be. I'm not worried about him. Give me your thoughts on Buehler and Matz, though. And Nola, if you feel differently.
Well, once again, when it comes to Bueller, you know, their lies, damn lies, statistics, Bueller had a couple of rough starts, but other than that, it's been very well. You're fine with Bueller. Don't worry about the ERA. That's, when you look at stats, I only care about really his last couple of starts, two, three starts. I don't care about what he did in March and April. It doesn't mean anything. You know,
the total ERA, especially at this point in the year, it doesn't really mean much. You're just really looking at how many quality starts you're getting out of these guys more than anything else.
You know, guys get up to slow starts all the time. It's still only May 18th. That's why I don't panic about a lot of these things. They'll be fine. Just relax and see how it goes. So I'm fine with Bueller. Aaron Nola, I probably have some concerns about. I mean, he's been nowhere near close to the pitcher he was last year. Nowhere near close. So you have to be concerned there. Nola, Scherzer, Kluber. I mean, took three of the top four pitchers taken. Boom. Terrible so far this year. So there's some concerns there. Matt's coming back off the injury. He's actually, you can make a pretty good argument, Mike, that Matt has been the Mets' most consistent starter from day one, other than the injury here, the elbow, irritation, we're calling this. So I have hope for Matt somewhere. It's against Miami. All right, so you're starting him today. If you can't start him against Miami, you can't start the guy. That's why I feel bad for anybody with DeGrom. I think it was somebody in the industry, I'm very bad at remembering names, but someone had a choice last night of starting Jacob DeGrom or, I can't even remember who else. But it was a good pitcher, but not DeGrom-like. And he goes, I started DeGrom. And well, you made the right choice. It didn't work out for you. The other pitcher pitched great. DeGrom didn't. You know, well, you made the right choice. You're always starting DeGrom against Miami. There was no even thought process there. It didn't work
six
out.
Six earned runs.
Same thing
over
with
five
Matt's
innings
here.
To those who didn't see the game last
shocking.
Night. He got smoked last night.
And I know it was funny because Craig Mish, who's actually going to be joining us now, right, on FNTSY, Craig Mish, he covers Miami, and he put out that he will only, because I think Miami had been shut out in three or four straight games, that he was only going to tweet in Spanish now until Miami scored a run. And I'm like, oh, God, Miami, please score. I'm like, oh, it's DeGrom. We're not going to be able to read Craig until Sunday. And then thankfully they scored early. And because he wasn't kidding, by the way. He did tweet out in Spanish. And then they scored. So he was back in English there. And I think he put out a funny thing afterwards. So if you... I didn't even know he knew Spanish. But look at that. It worked out.
I think you live in
but
Miami.
Who would have thought?
You have to learn it.
So, I guess you have to know something. Hey, I took 3 years of Spanish in high school. It didn't work out for me very well.
Yeah, well, I took French, and trust me, I don't use it. So
how'd that work out?
I could probably read it a little bit still, but I think it's safe to say I picked the wrong language to learn living in the New York area. Spanish would be far more useful. So as far as my fantasy team is concerned, you're talking about not panicking. I'm the ultimate in that as well, to the point, perhaps I trust the players too much, but I'm off to a really good start. I've made the least transaction moves in our league. We're 7 weeks in. I'm making like one a week. I'm just trying to hang on to some of the guys. And I drafted a couple of guys that are now coming off the DL. Miguel Sano being one, Carlos Martinez came off in the other. My big blow to my team so far, which I felt like a genius, and then that quickly went away, is Tyler Glasnow is on the DL for the next 6 weeks, and that's a hard one. But I've been on fire with some other guys. Yan Makata, Bellinger has been on fire. I've actually gotten some decent hitting out of catchers, which is rare, and, you know, Herman Marquez has been really a good pitcher for me, even though he's had a bad week this week. Those are the types of guys I've just sort of hung on to. I sent you the ultimate text the other night when I found out we were going to be working together today about Chris Sale. 17 strikeouts, he can't get a win, and I had some choice words about Brandon Workman blowing that game, but reality is you can't win them all. 17 strikeouts, come on, man. Just get me a W.
Don't you have to be an optimist there, though? You got 17 strikeouts, which is fantastic. And Sale's turned it around. I mean, hey, 2 weeks ago, we thought Sale might be done, right? That his arm was going to fall, he's going to get an amputation, and be done for the year. So be an optimist here. Yes.
31 strikeouts.
Isn't this what we expected
starts,
of Boston? This is what we expected of Boston, though. That this was wasn't going to be the starting staff. Their bullpen's bad.
It is bad.
This is going to be the issue
there.
They
didn't sign anybody.
It's very bad. No, they went with a whole bunch. They lost Kelly. You lost Kimbrel. You didn't sign anybody. Now, they do have some youngsters that aren't on the team yet in the minors that could help in the second half. But the first half is going to be a problem for Boston, where they're going to be games like this. You saw it last night. Well, Porcello actually blew that game last night. But you wonder if Porcello blew the game last night because Cora was afraid to go to the bullpen.
That's right. He's in too long. Right.
Yeah. So it plays both ways.
I have Matt Barnes there just hoping like he'll get some shots at saves or whatever. I read your closer report every week, and I have no faith that Matt Barnes is going to be like the closer role, but I just took a flyer on him late in the draft because I just thought this bullpen would be a mess, and like, who knows, maybe he'll get a shot and pitch well for a month. You just have to, you know, when you're doing fantasy baseball, you know better than anybody, when it comes to closers, you just have to piece it together. Pick up some saves while you have it, or some saves and holds while you have it. And then if the guy moves on and gets demoted and he doesn't have those opportunities anymore, so be it. More than half the teams are going to make changes at closer or setup man at some point during the season.
You know, listen, I understand Boston not paying for Kimbrel what he wanted. That contract was ridiculous. He wanted over $100 million. Yeah, that's crazy. They were never going to give that. But when you don't have somebody else on your roster who can take over, you can't just punt the position either. You know, I think Boston thought, like a lot of teams, well, you know, we can have any kind of adequate reliever in there, we'll be fine. And I do kind of believe that, Mike. I do agree with that. Yeah, you don't need a top flight guy, but they didn't even have a secondary guy. Right? They had a whole bunch of, you know, your Brashear, Barnes, you know, work. We can go on and on here. I mean, they do have some guys in the minors who eventually, but it wasn't going to be there in April. And for a team like Boston that had Prince money, are you so worried about the cap that you can't go out and sign somebody? I understand that. I said I fully agree not signing Kimbrel. He wanted way too much money for a guy who, let's face it, looked like he had problems last year. So I'm completely on board with that. But to just punt it was weird. Just strange. So, hey, it is what it is. As far as the closer report goes, I don't think that the guy who's going to lead Boston with saves at the end of the season, I don't think that he's on the team right now. Not the 25-man roster. You know, I think, once again, they will acquire somebody eventually. You know, I think for them it better be sooner rather than later. And I actually think they need more than one bullpen guy. I think they need a closer and at least one other reliever, if not two.
I agree.
To truly compete with these other teams. But, yep. We knew this going in with Boston. This is not a shock.
No, it isn't. So, full slate of MLB today. I'm trying to think some other. You got John Lester going up against Steven Strasburg tonight in Washington.
It's a nice matchup.
It is a good matchup. Washington's got to turn it around, as we said early in the show. They're 8 games below 500.
Talk about a team that has bullpen problems.
No, exactly. Bumgarner, Godley, who else we got? Berrios throwing today for the Twins. So he's at 6-2 on the season and 3.05 ERA going up against LeBlanc from Seattle. So Seattle's obviously tailed off. The Twins at 29-15. I think technically now, no, they're a half game behind the Astros for best record in the majors. We thought this Central Division was going to be messy, but we didn't expect that the Twins could run away with it. You think the Twins play at a high level for the rest of the year? You like the makeup of this team? We've been waiting a few years on them.
Well, what the Twins are, I mean, they can hit, they can't pitch. That's really what they're. I mean, Berrios has been solid. Odorizzi's been arguably a Cy Young candidate right now. That will change. Odorizzi won't last all year, but they'll be able to hit. It's a bad division. You know, you got Chicago, KC, and Detroit. That's why they are where they are. And that's the way it is in the American League.
You and I love
the
Indians under this year.
Yeah, because we knew they couldn't hit too. They were all going to be about their starting pitching, which might be the best in the majors, but no Kluber, no Clevinger. It's starting to take effect. They don't have the office to make up for that.
Agreed. I guess the bad division could carry them to some extra wins, but it's tough. So, yeah, we got some good matchups today. George and Cam are going to talk about it on the other side of things. So some quality pitching today that you can keep an eye on. Full slate of MLB, as always. I don't think I missed any high-profile pitchers there. No, I did not. But, you know, that big series, Houston and Boston and New York and Tampa in the American League are off to good start with good games last night on both sides of it. So that's it for me. I'll talk to you next week, next Saturday. George is up with Cam next, and we'll tweet out those interviews that we did on Twitter in the next couple of minutes. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon.